ahead. I'm reading this to you. I knew you were coming back.
Of course you're not mentioning me.
Well, everyone, Ed hasn't been here in about 5 months, so a round of applause for him. There's that better.
Go back to the room.
Okay, wait, thank you, Harry.
Last week David asked me to read about Tinder out. David, come and get your Tinder out.
Pat. Love you. It's better be good toys,
please. Right. Okay. I'm nervous as always, but you're on. Okay. I thought I knew who you really were. I thought I knew the true you, the faithful you, the caring you, the beautiful you. But no, you had to go and change that. How did you manage that, I asked myself. Well, the answer to that was fairly simple. You lured me into full sense of security with your wonderful smile and round beaming face, and you charmed me with your clever American wit. Seeing you stumbling out of the crane lane several times a week until the turn on. After all, your drunken stagger was like that of a graceful ballerina, seemingly perfected for hours on end, yet so random at the same time. I could have watched you for hours, and so I did. Your eye met mine, and a friendly wink and do. Turning my back to go on my merry way, I thought something hit the back of my head, so I turned around to find you throwing sorts of peanuts in my direction. Were you mad, I thought? Well, I, as well as everyone else, already knew the answer to this. You were a great shot and succeeded in firing peanuts directly into my right eye, causing me to grimace with pain, at which point I lay on the ground in shock. You came over slowly, very slowly, but when you did finally reach me, you leaned down and passed the kiss directly on my lips, which distracted me from the pain that was engulfing my body. Years passed and we shared many drunken nights together. Our wedding soon came and it was the last best night of our silly little lives. There was entertainment aplenty and fun for all. Instead of a singer at the church, you had a poet with long glossy hair reciting wonderful poems about the infamous Spinani the poet, all to the tiny tunes of the violin player in the off the corner. He's a curious young chap, a man with a large black beard inside of which I can only assume he kept the secrets of the world and possibly that morning's breakfast. The priest was a lovely man, short yet outspoken, a part-time English professor at UCC, or so and so. Short, curly-ish hair was his main attraction, followed closely by a beaming smile which kept the room alight, and you were late today. If it wasn't for the young girl at the back of the room sitting alongside her Italian stallion, then things may have been perfect, but her constant shouting at the group in Susan sitting to her right hand side for what seemed to be no apparent reason kept her proceedings at a snail's pace. So what if they were belly dancing down the aisles at the direct bearing school? I thought it was highly entertaining, especially my soon-to-be wife who tried to copy her movements, something which she should never try again. It may have taken 12 hours, but the ceremony finally came to a close. Out of the church she went and straight into the horse-drawn carriage we went. Our driver adorning a top hat and coattails would not stop talking and claimed that he used to be an English teacher. Did he not realise that we just got married and were heading off on our honeymoon? Why on earth could that? Did you not leave us in peace? He wore glasses, sunglasses. Was he trying to look mysterious or did he have something hidden behind him? Perhaps he had a little mirror behind there, which he used to see back in his carriage so that he could tell what we were doing. But what would we be doing that could have been any concern to him? If only I'd find that man now, then I'd give him the peace of my mind. What was his name? Memory does not serve me correctly. Was it Swiney? Sweeney? Sweeney Swiney? Or perhaps Joe Sweeney? Oh, who cares? Is naturally far from my mind. The journey ended and we arrived looking up at the huge cruise liner in front of us, my wife squealed and gleaned once again, attempted to perform a bit of belly dancing. One stern glance turned, she stopped. Oh, hold on a minute. How have I really forgot this date in the story and not told you my wife's name? Or surname is my seeing as my surname is Matthews and her first name is Jennifer, I think you can figure it out. And for those of you who can't, it's tough. Right. That's enough about my wife. I only married her for her money anyway. Don't tell her that. I boarded the cruise ship and locked my wife in her room with her three kids. Yes, I know I never mentioned that we had kids before now, but hey, I forgot. I'm not going to rewrite the story. Anyway, I think any other fathers in the room can relate to that. I know Jean can anyway. I took a stroll on board and after renting the deck for a second time, I spotted you. You were lying there in the sunlight there wearing shorts, a bikini top and sandals. All I could do was stare from a distance and drool for at least 10 minutes, after which I walked up to you, introduced myself, and nervously shook your hand, all the while keeping my focus on you and only you. I kneeled down, asked your name, and you said it was Aoife. I took your hand and gently kissed at which point I pointed towards the sky and said, look, can you see it? Can you? You looked up and so I took my chance. I stole it. I stole your Kinder Egg. Your beautiful, wonderful Kinder Egg. The object has stolen my attention all the while I pretended that it was you that I was interested in. Yes, I think you're amazing, but by no means worth more to me than a Kinder Egg. With its golden wrapping, almost dressed like your sweet chocolate interior and a soft, fluffy, creamy filling. This is way better than anything my wife would give me. Eat with that. I briefly ran back to the room, during which time I left in the air like a little kid on Christmas morning or an 18-year-old having their first legal pint. I made sure to eat all of the Kinder Eggs before unlocking the door to her room that I certainly wasn't sharing with you. After all, since when did you ever give me anything? Except for empty pint glasses, abuse, and constant evil eyes. Opening the door to her room, I found you there alone, with no sign of her kids. Were they hiding? Was this some kind of game? Had someone taken them? Who could it have been? Lucy? Paul? Ed? Gabriel Fitzmark? The American girls in the corner at the back of the room? I didn't have a clue. My wife said she had a confession to make. She told me that she sold them to pirates. And what did she get for them? Money. She got a bloody belly dancing costume. What on earth is up with all this belly dancing and where did these pirates come from? I don't remember any pirates in the story, but hey, who cares? Those kids are finally gone and soon my wife will be too. As soon as I go up to the deck and get to throw her overboard, and I'm happy to confess that that is exactly what I did later that afternoon. Where's Jennifer? Cash. Returning to my regular life in Cork, I went to a Vale and told the story. An experimental story to see if I could put you all to sleep and see if I could steal all your Kinder Eggs. And did it work? Of course it did. How many of you have Kinder Eggs on you at the moment? Go on. Check your pockets. See? None of you do, so my plan works. But wait, I pushed my wife overboard in the cruise ship. Yeah, I could see her in front of me, glaring at me, waiting to kill me as soon as the story. Yes, Jennifer, I know what you're thinking. It's not the first time you thought it, but hey, with that, I'm going to run away with my Kinder Eggs and hopefully my life. And so there ends my story.
Thank you, Alan. Next up, we have Joe Sweeney.
Good evening, everyone. This is a continuation of the saga of Maybe Gonal, who's a teacher in a school, and she's a very well-bred and upper-class and intellectual, but the school is rotten ready. It's the middle of winter, the kids are freezing to death, and they've just got to heat her over into the classroom. Dear Principal, 12:30 p.m. I must, in fairness, congratulate you on the way you handled that situation on the window ledge. A boy has got onto the window ledge trying to escape from the class. I wasn't sure of the logic you were using, however, in threatening young Evans with suspension from school. After all, getting out of school was the whole point. How would such a threat give you leverage, Principal? It might have been more effective if you had promised him suspension instead. I think your talk him down technique needs some polishing. Nevertheless, credit where credit is due. You were very quick to grab his wrist just as his body was taking off. I suppose the sight of your face glaring at him must have helped him make up his mind. I can understand that part well enough. I watched you with interest through the little thawed eelets and the frost on the prefab window as you expertly dangled your catch before landing him. It would have made a lovely Christmas picture taken through the opening in the frosted window. It could have been nicely reproduced for our school's pack of Christmas cards that Mrs. Kelly, the art teacher, makes every year. It would have given the parents a warm feeling all over, I'm sure, to see you dangling a pupil out the upper floor window in midwinter. It would not have been without a certain festive charm. It just couldn't have failed to put their minds at ease, and with the caring attitude we have to each pupil, the individual attention we give them, and the advanced level of pastoral care in the school. 12:37. And while I'm talking about warmth, I know you'll be relieved to hear that I managed to put the fire out. Yes, the fire.
Okay.
Did I not tell you about that earlier?
Oh, no, that's right. I mustn't have had time, but don't panic. It was a minor thing, really. Not really a fire at all. Just a few flames licking towards the ceiling, occasioned by several straws and plastic bottles poked into the heater by a disconsolate student. I doused the flames quickly with a bottle of Coke, which a pupil had been drinking on the sly. He never even knew and noticed he had the bottle under the seat. But I noticed lots of things. I wasn't called Maeve the Microscope in my last school for nothing. The fire's all past history now, so there's no need to get your toes in a twist. The only fly in the ointment, as it were, is that as I poured the Coke onto the heater, there was a loud bang and a flash, etc., which I immediately recognized from the last time, so back to square one. The heater is no longer working. I fear the socket may be in need of professional attention. It was the Coke that did it, of course. That was the last straw, I swear. The socket looks filthy now. It has gone all black. It will have to be cleaned. That's a relatively simple matter, however. As soon as the power is back on, I'll have one of the pupils cleaned with a bucket of water and some soap. To hell with the danger. 12:50. Up-to-date special. Good news. James Lafine, the delicate blue pupil, the one like a fish, remember? He appears to be recovering. Apparently, it wasn't the cold causing his blue complexion, but a sweet that had lodged in his throat. It was thanks to sheer good fortune that the pupil behind him, looking for a loan of a pen, started to thump him on the back, and so dislodged the sweet from his mouth. The sweet shot forward and luckily missed my spectacles by a hair's breadth and is now stuck safely on the blackboard. But I don't mind that. My main concern is that James is better. In any case, you would hardly notice the sweet among all the chewing gum, eggs and dried sticky orange juice that have adorned the blackboard for days now. There is also what looks like candy floss in the corner. Wait till I check. No, it's only a fungus. I wonder when this place was last cleaned. 12:56. Well, it's been nice to be able to bring you such good news all round in this correspondence. The only remaining difficulties are the cold, which is still quite severe, and the fact that Pat, the other immobile pupil, has still not moved. I wonder, could he be simply allergic to school when in the place is incapable of movement or action of any kind? Some teenagers are susceptible to that, I think. 13 hours. Now, as I was saying, Pat. Oh no, set the fire alarm, I hear. Could there be a fire in the school, I wonder? Or just another student prank? Everything's all right at this end. Our fire was put out 10 minutes ago. I wonder if it's another false alarm. Most alarms around here are false. What alarms me most around here is how little alarm there is. We all seem to have become inured to daily crises. Anyway, I won't act in a hurry. I'll wait a minute or two. 13:09. I wonder what I should do now. I'm tempted to dice with danger. Frankly, I would be loath to miss the opportunity of seeing my pupils warmed up for once after this terrible cold spell they have been enduring. Should I evacuate the planets according to fire drill practice, I wonder? Wait now a moment. 12:52. There is a strange liquid running down the door. I think the rubber rim around it is melting. Smoke is coming down through the little holes in the ceiling panels. And you know that fiberglass insulation, the stuff that looks like candy floss, but doesn't taste like it, as some of my students have found out to their cost. Well, that started to melt into a kind of treacle and is dripping down in black drops. We haven't ever been this hot in school before. It's almost marvelous. I wonder if I should evacuate the class, though. It seems a shame to have. 12:54. I think I might. 12:55. I suppose I should. 12:56. To hell with it, I will. Warmest regards, Maeve.
Thank you, Joe. Do you want to come and sit over here? Next up to the open mic, we have Bree Buckley. Bree?
Hey, this is Cole Song. When you were thirsty, I gave you my tears to drink. You knocked over the cup. When you were lonely, I gave you my heart. You used it as a towel for your dirty hands. When you were helpless, I gave you my hands. You tied them around my back. When you were afraid, I gave you my spine. You snapped it like a twig. But I'm still sitting in the back seat of your heart, though another does the driving. I am one with your leathery folds. I am the smell that lingers that nothing can dispel. And one day, I will strike you like a gong. You will feel the crash vibrate and travel like my fingers up your spine. And you will see me as though I were walking through water. When don't you know, love, that is how I've always seen you. But I will be gone to lie at the bottom of the ocean, or perhaps to sit in the light of some other screen. But even then, you'll still be sitting in the back seat of my heart and asking, are we there yet? This is called The Trouble with Numbers.
I just wrote it today, so I mightn't be able to read my own writing. So apologies again.
Good things come in twos, or so I've been told. Two eyes wandering whimsical through streets of mine. Two hands working together, making life a workload. Two for joy, two birds of a feather, two of a kind. But what about three? Three together can work magic. The number four has opened many doors. 5, 6, 7 can be the heaven's attic, and 10 is reputedly the highest score. One is for sorrow, but only one you can't divide. One is a single, one is a self, one is a whole number. You never hear the sun and moon complain, though they're never in the sky together. They do their own things without fuss or thunder, and do a pretty good job. But let's not come to twos and threes about this. I was never good with numbers anyway. Time is money, so I'll try my best to be brisk. But time and money, both being numbers, tend to get in my way. So I like Snias because it makes me contrary that these numbers are still in their skin in rippling universe. It makes my head spin that these words are just as arbitrary and exist somewhere in the space between electron and nucleus. But maybe it's okay that even swan feet are wet, that there is an underside to every upside. River reflections do not always paint the shape of a number, and perhaps that's wherein their beauty lies. You can't count the weight of the water, you can't fathom its depth with measuring rod, you can't count the beat of the music that's born there, you can't count the length of a sunbeam, you can't count the memories that rain on your face, you can't count on the clock inhabiting your dreams, you can't count the star shards before you step on them, you can't count on two hands the joy in your life. You can't count the dancing circles the wind bequeaths them. You can't count. You can't count. But surely you can count on that.
Thanks, Reed. Next up we have Miriam Case.
You and I cried all night, heavy hollow tears against the pane, and wished bitter tears against the pane, the pulsing traumas of demolished dress. Our tears were not the same, neither was our grief, yet when I looked through you, I saw familiar icy black, where left the darkest pitch that caused shattered glass to crack. Purity the white laboratory rat lives behind white walls, underneath a white ceiling, touched and fed and watered by white coats, who tested her intelligence by conditioning. One morning, Miss Skinner, the chief white coat, found her with her entrails hanging out. She was dispatched in a black polythene bin liner to the caretaker's fire before the kids found out, and tales of purity cage to cage rage flew from mouth to mouth. Purity Part 2. From the caretaker's fire, purity's ashes fell amongst the children's cloth to join the roots and shoots of the growing. But her spirit soared phoenix-like with the waiting shoot and crow.
This is
the first time you've said poems here.
Except we have Anita and
This is a book review by about the boy in Strike of Gamma that got published on a month ago. This is both a children's and an adult's book. The language is childlike. Not many assumptions are made about the skill of the reader. It is told from the viewpoint of a 9-year-old boy. So if you're not used to novels, this would be a good start. It is both dark and inspiring at the same time. An imaginative tale set in Hitler's Germany. Innocence and corruption go together. A little intrigue with the innocent. Ignorance and corruption go hand in hand. Bruno, the storyteller, doesn't understand, to his credit, the terrible things that are going on. The ethnic cleansing, the torture. He cannot put it on his father's shoulders. Bruno wants to be an explorer. On an exploration at a place he calls Outer, he finds what he misses most, a friend. The story of their genuine friendship takes off with an unpredictable ending. By the end of the book, Bruno has won respect from his family. The episodes about him and his sister are told ironically and entertainingly. Bruno feels deeply for people, both Jews and Nazis. His family moves to Auschwitz, where his father is the commandant. I would recommend this book. Okay, this is a poem by John Matthew called St. John's Work. A blind owl prays, each ray long delayed, aborted. He hobbles around a weather-beaten field, snorting with thistle and nettles, and to some healing herb will fill his nostrils, announcing she is there.
Next up we have Eugene Crowley.
On work, on Ofton, Dugan, on Cade Ulaw, the Biltina, Gela on Leigh, Nasul or Car Havana, Dina on Tuba, Dina on Tuba, Dina Gun Kota, Dina Gun Chris, Dina Gun Hatter. 8,000 seats, wet shingle to beach, wet kisses and cold hands, hardy winter, low lying sun, on a living tuber, Chinny.
Thank you, Jane. I think it'll be a trilingual evening now with our next guest. You ready for a poem in Russian? It's over for Maria. Thank you, Maria.
I'm going to read in Russian, so I'll give you the short translation. The verse I'm going to read is about the freedom. The freedom is difficult. The freedom is scary. The freedom is the thing you have to work hard to get, and even work harder to follow it. Свобода – это трудно. Свобода – это страшно. Ведущий в море судно, не помню день вчерашний. Прожить всю жизнь на суше. Ты для того и создан. Держать, пока не поздно. Держать, пока не поздно. Держать, пока не поздно. Дешевые сосиски, похожие на сигары. Нас вычеркнут из списка. Нас нет на радарах. Опять проходит мимо пастух холеный розы. Держать, пока не поздно. Держать, пока не поздно. Держать, пока не поздно. Мы вместе так недавно. Мы вместе ненадолго. Ты очень-очень славный, но это все без толку. Ты говоришь, останься, ты смотришь так серьезно. Держать, пока не поздно, держать, пока не поздно, держать, пока не поздно. Бетонные коробки, присыпка, да побелка, да сквозняки, да пробки, да лакон, тарелки. Тот город щедро платит, он дает небо звезды. Держать, пока не поздно, держать, пока не поздно, держать, пока не поздно. Угодям нужен воздух, и пламя возродится. Держать, пока не поздно, да только не держится! Сменилась за полвека усталость до бессилия. Отпали мои крылья, отпали мои крылья, отпали мои крылья. Свобода — это трудно. Свобода это страшно, ведущий в море судно не помнит день вчерашний, прожить ты жизнь на суше. Ты для того ли создан бежать, пока не поздно? Бежать, пока не поздно. Бежать, пока не поздно.
Alan, did you understand that? Sounds like you got your freedom.
That's all
right. That's all right, yeah. Thanks, Maria. Next up we have Mr. Patrick Carter.
Going to read several short extracts from a sequence called The Garden. I wish I came up with that originally, but it's actually what's the guy's name, an actor and not to say. Anyhow,
more
Kevin Smith. And Richard Ford repeated the same scene that I was attributing it to Kevin Smith. Boys made privy to war's atrocity. His stomach lies shivering on insidious grass. Wet, killer, kidney-stifling grass. A horde of snails oozes over a bed of blossoms, sliming precious Persian jewels, Livingston daisies, love in the mist. They chomp and chew to a village of lilies. At cool, anemic sunrise, a floral Mai Lai lies ragged in their slow-motion wake. Bolts of bridal cloth glisten silvery over the wounded stem. The revenge of the lilies. The boy plots with grieving lilies. What are the fears which snails share? Being landlord to a wasp in wasp's shell. Being mistaken for a bumpkin periwinkle. Being spotted with a polka dot foot. Being informed one is no longer hermaphrodite. Being fed for life on a diet of thistles. Being naked as a slug in Sahara desert. Being tested for Dr. Martin's new stamp smart night vision boot. Being buried in salt. Being antlerless after a fight with a black scissor. Being serenaded by a crow singing Shelsyhorn, Shelsyhorn. Being acquainted with the verb manger. Lured night. The boy knows his last summer has come and listens intently to the sadnesses of automobiles. Their lonely wails, their frustrated screeches. He sits alone in his parents' garden, beneath the moon-capped shade of the youngest sycamore. The tree has fruited for the first time, not because the boy is dying, but because it is simply time. The older trees applaud, they had angels between their leaves, flames their seed. A horseshoe bat dipping, rising, confused in eddies beams. The boy dreams he is king of his backyard sliver of greenland. He dreams he wears a jade crown, a wreath of green fly, that the ants and bees respect his sovereignty, that this summer night continues for an eternity.
Thank you, Bert. To leave people left, if there's anyone else who'd like to say a poem on the open mic, shout for them. Next up, we have... Yep. Oh, yeah, sorry. It's last round of the bar. if you'd like to get a place, now is your time. Do we have a Fiona Reardon in the house? Fiona Reardon? Fiona Reardon.
The corner of the room, it was not as it once was. The short walk was previous, it had to be according to scene. Furniture to be bought in that era, the polished and cleaned was up to life, lived in, but only for a short while, and not brought out the dirty lining. The people replaced the items, they were not loyal to earlier incarnations, but hid the true cause of pockets, the goblet logic on the wallpaper. And how the room is now today, the light avoiding the dust on the window has always been, and littering the complicated carpet print. This is not an issue with those who sell the living. Those who lived here are dead. Red down the groping, flashy guard the room entrance, and through with him. They want to let us in to see. Restoration of that lady's sleep. Thank you.
Thank you, Emma. Next up, we have Sir Alan Dibby.
This poem I just wrote last week, with a name dropping first, I happened to be in a conference in Dubrovnik, people are jealous about this, and I met this very nice person from the Czech Republic who spent 3 days talking with mushrooms. And she also could swim like a fish, most of us drank like a fish, but she swam like a fish. And the mushrooms are not a metaphor for anything else, as you might say. So this is called Mushrooms on the Island. It's a sonnet, which is a form I actually like.
You didn't
what? Mushrooms on the Island. In Ireland, they grow up overnight, springing from below with wings of angels, singing the dawn with white music, the magic mushrooms of wonder, of delight. They are white and mute as the swans, whirling the breath of seagulls and white crows, opening their pores while, "Where are you from?" greets the dawn. There are places where the living really breathe, where swimming to 15 islands is but a water drop of the sea, places where you can check out but never leave. Mushrooms can drive you mad, they tell me so. You can wonder at them, but eat them too. That line was for you, by the way.
I got that.
I knew you were going to hear it, so I put it in here. The second one is actually a translation of an 18th century poem called Manon Héireann, the Women of Ireland, which Mary Robinson used as her mantra when she was standing for election. And the original, I said, is an Irish by a poet called Padraig Berlin, and I was just wondering, I would like to sing it if I could, but I don't want to get thrown out, and then I'll read the translation. I should say that, a bit like William X. Wright, I've been talking all day, and my voice is kind of done, you know?
But
I
like my...
What? never stopped me before. You know? So the song goes, Tá bang hele ring, a bran nach shedon, is mahal and old. Tá bang hele ring, ne vishte le maharasi hoel, na shinam tia. Tá bang hele ring, ne vahar le vio, mishle mrek, mahar te gre, Mahar feod, ta dan inirin, adach inir yam, maravain apog, o dan inirinach, nachat an shtile, is mahar feo, is ta dan inabar yam, nachat shidiyat, nachain gadyo, Tá chaillín spéúil ag a fardan bhíola dúhrán chrón. Tá dan a dhíotá na siúling lé gafain an tór ó dan a léna scartes an mén ná na táin da bó ná le dan na bhuirach Bailon hwe, a bel clor hi roin, sni e gym lai ser, ma chalar hen, ach God old. So that's more verses for you. The true translation, Women of Ireland, which said that Mary Robinson knew, what she didn't know was the poet actually thought he was in love with all these women, but he had a problem with women. The main problem was that he was impotent. We didn't tell her that while she was there. Women of Ireland, so this is part of it. Abroad in Ireland, there's a woman who would give me joy and tons to drink. And there in Ireland, abroad likes me to strut and sing and pluck strings. And here in Ireland, there's one would prefer me dead than to jump and jink on my body rotting in graveyard clay beyond life ahoy and cunning shrinks. A woman, a friend of a friend, she would be jealous if she got a whiff of my goings and comings with others I know whom at least I kissed, as my searing love of a secret girl who will always live, but men with English will always get off with the best of things. This woman said, if I hang out with her, I will get her gold, which I should prefer than the cows and herds of all Tyrone, or a woman more beautiful than Ballyfeard, or than all that's owned, in its richest of counties, its lands and bogs, its lakes, its markets, its precious stones.
Thank you, Alan. Next up we have the lad for the night, unless there's anyone else who'd like to take on, Mr. Joe Harney.
My window, I flicked him some fat. He gobbled it down, saying, thank you for that. I tried to entice him to my lonely room, cast him another crumb, he hopped nearer the gloom. Worked it down greedily, eyed me like a screw, as I were shackled, something he knew. I tossed him one last bit, crossed the awful gulf. He turned and flew and flew. I felt like a wolf. Storyteller, and there are people out there who love telling their stories, but they never listen when you tell yours. Storyteller. I have heard all your mysteries, now I'll tell you just mine. Yours have thrown no answers to me, not a line. Why should I squint through someone else's mist by leaving only white knuckles on my wrist? My time now travels at the speed of lightning, and your story is retold with my hand tightening. Someday you may listen and fold to my tale, yours are old.